College affordability remains a hot topic as students head back to campuses this fall. We're talking about it on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's look at several bills now authored by Republicans and Democrats that would shake up major revenue streams for state universities. UW System President Ray Cross is urging lawmakers to end the tuition freeze for resident undergrads that started in 2013.
Well, it isn't just that we're seeking to increase tuition. We're seeking an increased investment, whatever form that takes. We cannot maintain quality without sufficient investment in the university.
And that was Ray Cross earlier this month on WPT's Here and Now. What do you think about the UW tuition freeze? Should it continue or come to an end? How should lawmakers be addressing college affordability? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kelly Meyerhofer is the higher education reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Kelly, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So we saw a number of bills this summer addressing higher ed. And let's start with a proposal from Representative Dave Murphy and Senator Andre Jacques that would capture future tuition increases at the rate of inflation. And we had Senator Jacques on our program earlier this month talking about his student days at UW-Madison.
I was there during the years where you saw significant double-digit tuition increases, and tuition was seen as an escape valve for not making some of the same difficult choices that other levels of government made.
So, Kelly, UW system leaders have opposed past tuition freezes without additional state funding. How are they responding to this new idea of future tuition hikes capped at inflation?
Well, I think the bill, you know, they like that this bill gives some specificity to how the tuition freeze would be lifted. But the bill that Dave Murphy has proposed, it locks in the tuition rate that a student pays in his or her first year for the next 3 years. So it's essentially another sort of tuition freeze for each incoming class. And I don't know if the system, you know, it restricts their flexibility a lot. And so they haven't said whether they support the bill or not.
And how does it lock in? Because isn't it like 3 years where you would have to be set at a specific tuition rate? Or how does that work?
Yeah, so when a student enters a UW campus, the tuition freeze or the tuition price that is applied to them in that year applies for the next 3 years. So it's, you know, a four-year college career, and that's the price that they would pay.
Could that have an even greater effect on keeping tuition rates down, you know, because any increase would not affect most students?
Correct. I mean, the only increases that the UW System Board of Regents could have is, you know, raising it to inflation, and that would only apply to the next incoming class.
And we heard Senator Jacques reference double-digit tuition increases during his campus days in the early 2000s. If we didn't have the current tuition freeze, what limits exist on how much universities could increase tuition any given year?
That's a good question. I'm not aware of any sort of limits if there weren't a tuition freeze, which is why the lawmakers put it in to try to keep affordability, you know, available for students.
What do system leaders say the issue is with keeping a tuition freeze in place? What have we heard from Ray Cross?
It really limits their flexibility, especially when you couple that with the decline in state money that they've received. The Fiscal Bureau said earlier this summer the system's been cut by about $1.1 billion since 2011. And, you know, with the tuition freeze in place for the past 6 years, that's about $200 million that they could have received in inflation-level tuition increases.
So this summer, Democrats proposed different bills that would give the UW system more funding to offset tuition freezes. Have Democrats explained how long they want to freeze tuition and how much that could cost taxpayers?
Yeah, Democrats' stance seems to be that they want to keep the tuition freeze in place. They recognize that both faculty, students, families, they like the tuition freeze. It keeps affordability in place. But what they're really seeking to do is what they call fully fund the tuition freeze by giving the state more aid money to offset the money that the system is losing from the freeze.
And how would that aid be given out? Like, what would we see there?
I think that would really be up to lawmakers how they would want to fund that. I mean, I think Democrats really like giving the system a lot of flexibility, so I think they would give them the money and say the system knows how to spend their money best, and they would, you know, let them spend it how they see fit.
We're talking about some bills this year that could affect tuition and fees at UW system schools. Our guide is Kelly Meyerhofer with the Wisconsin State Journal. She covers higher ed. How do you think state authorities could be cutting college costs? What should the state's colleges be doing? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Kelly, are there any lawmakers talking about cutting tuition rates or making it free to attend publicly funded colleges like in other states?
I haven't heard that become part of the conversation yet. I mean, I know it's part of the national conversation with presidential candidates, but I haven't heard any state lawmakers talk about that yet. That's a good question, though.
In terms of Democrats and Republicans coming together on the issue of a tuition freeze, do you see them, you know, are they on the same page about anything? Do you see any type of overlap where they have a vision on this?
I think the fact that both Republicans and Democrats have introduced bills related to the tuition freeze speaks to a sort of recognition that, you know, the tuition freeze will now be in place for 8 years. It'll be in place for this next year and the next year after that. So I think the fact that they're talking about, you know, paving some sort of way, starting some sort of conversation about it speaks to that.
We have divided government with a Republican-controlled legislature, Governor Evers. Governor, does there seem to be any way that the two can work together and come to a consensus on tuition rates?
I mean, I think the fact that Governor Evers proposed putting more money in his budget proposal to give to the system so that that they would have money to make up for the freeze, I think Republicans seemed interested in that, but just not as much money as Governor Evers would have wanted.
Well, let's look. This summer, Representative Dave Murphy and Senator Andre Jacques introduced legislation that would ban fee-funded building projects in the UW unless a majority of students voted twice in support of higher fees. So can you take a step back here? How can students currently increase their fees for building projects?
Well, currently, only a majority of all students who participate in one referendum are required for approval of the fees that are used for different amenities on campus, such as student unions, recreation facilities. Dorms are separate from that. The what students pay to live in dorms, that money goes to build and renovate new dorms. So we're talking specifically just about like student unions, sports rec centers, how those are funded. It comes from a variety of different revenue sources, but a major one is referendums on campus.
So these referendums on campus, how do they work typically?
Usually, like, student government works with the university to say, you know what, we need a new student union. Ours is falling apart. So they decide to hold an election. And if they get a majority of the students voting in that election to say, yes, I want to increase my student fees by X amount, then they have that money and lawmakers sign on and then they can have the money to build the new student union or whatever they're after.
And how many students typically participate in these fee referendums?
Turnout's usually pretty low. I mean, the highest that I heard of was at UW-Madison several years ago. They signed on about a third of campus voted in a 2014 referendum to upgrade their rec facilities.
So what new challenges would the proposed legislation add for fee increases?
Well, I mean, the student leaders that I've talked to say it would pretty much be impossible to get a majority of all students to campus voting in a campus election and approving a fee increase. So, I mean, they say that it would make it virtually impossible to pass anything.
So basically, this legislation could effectively block all fee increases because of low participation?
Fee increases that relate to these buildings. There are some different fees that the university can raise for other things that students don't have control over, but for this, yes.
So we're basically, you know, the issue with capital improvements and building changes, building upgrades, that would be severely compromised under a fee structure.
Correct.
So how important are student fees for building projects?
Well, I mean, when you look at how much fees have increased over the past couple of years, you know, the universities have relied on them more than I think they have in the past before the tuition freeze began. You know, it's important to note the tuition freeze funds more like academic and operating costs, and this is capital projects, so it's a little bit separate. But fees have increased. I mean, since 2013, when the freeze began at UW-Madison, fees have increased about 28%.
28%. So that's quite a hike.
Yeah, I mean, 28%. You know, it's substantial. It is worth noting the fees in general. I mean, it was like around $1,100 in 2013. UW-Madison students are going to be paying closer to, I think, $1,400.
And is that replicated around the UW? Do you see fee hikes happening at other campuses?
Yeah, I mean, year to year, you know, there's always a few campuses that don't have projects going on, so they don't need to increase it. But the general trend across the UW campuses is that fees are going up.
We're talking about bills that would affect tuition and fees at state universities for years to come. Kelly Meyerhofer stays with us. She's the higher education reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. How does the cost of tuition or student fees affect your life? Are you a college student, a parent, or a teacher? What issues in higher ed do you think policymakers should be talking about? Do you support the state's tuition freeze at UW System Schools? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back with this in just a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're looking at legislation that would affect higher ed on this edition of the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We've been talking about segregated fees, these charges in addition to tuition assessed to all students for things like student services and activities and programs and building facilities that support the mission of the UW. A Republican bill aims to put a check on what segregated fees can be used for at the UW campuses, and the fees proposal is one of a series of bills aimed at issues across the UW system under a Republican package is called Open and Accessible UW. So should the state require a higher threshold before students can approve fee increases? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kelly Meyerhofer is the higher education reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, and she stays with us. Kelly, another issue that you've recently been covering is, you know, state agencies that oversee for-profit colleges. Lawmakers moved the agency under the umbrella of another agency a couple years ago. Can you refresh what's going on there?
Sure. There used to be an independent board that oversaw Wisconsin's for-profit colleges, and in September 2017, the Republican-controlled legislature and former Governor Scott Walker decided to shift oversight to within a state agency, and their reason for that was that it would decrease the regulatory and fiscal burden on for-profit schools. So I decided to check in, you know, roughly 2 years since this happened. And what I found is that the agency overseeing for-profit colleges now is sort of building up its watchdog role after this transition. There was a lot of experienced employees with expertise in this topic that left or were not invited to join the state agency. There was prolonged vacancies, and they had no spending authority to fill those positions.
And this is the Educational Approval Board?
Correct. It's called it was the Educational Approval Board. It's now part of the Department of Safety and Professional Services.
So the Walker administration said that during the transition that the same number of employees would be employed under the DSPS and assume all responsibilities the board previously oversaw. Is that what you found in your reporting?
I think that they their spending authority was limited. They had about 4 employees, and they couldn't fill those vacancies to bring them back up to the number that they were promised to have. And just one of those 4 employees previously worked for the board.
Is there less need for the watchdog agency today since so many for-profit schools have been closed?
That's true. I mean, under the Obama administration, there was a lot of federal scrutiny over these colleges, and a lot of them did close. And the economy is also doing pretty strongly right now. But the worry is, you know, these are kind of cyclical. And as soon as you hit a recession, there's a lot of for-profit colleges that open to try to provide people with new training to get them new jobs. So there's some concern from lawmakers about, you know, are we equipped to be in the right place for when a recession does hit and these colleges come back?
Let's take a call now. Barb joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Barb.
Hi, this is a great discussion, and I want to just add something to the mix, which could be a good story for WPR or the reporter who's on for her newspaper. My comment is that I graduated from UW-Stout in 1980. I had a college debt of $1,200 from student loans. My tuition was about $500 a semester. And I was, at that time, we benefited from the fact that the state was paying a larger proportion of a student's, the cost of tuition for a student. So I'm interested in knowing what that percentage has risen to, where the student is responsible, and where that money was diverted to. Because when I graduated, I paid $75 a quarter for 10 years. I had a great way to start out a life after college. And the students coming out of even our public colleges have just a ridiculous amount of student loan debt. You know, how can they prepare for the next stage of their life? So back to the original question, what is the percentage that the state paid in 1980 versus what the state pays today per student in the UW system?
Yeah, Barb, thank you so much. And Barb really wants to look at the history here, the historical impact of student debt. And what have we seen on that? How has it changed?
I think from the 1970s, the state was funding roughly 40% of the cost of the UW system's budget. I think with the current budget passed earlier this summer, it's around 14 or 15%. The UW system has really tried to diversify, you know, sources of revenue coming in. They get a lot more federal money through grants and stuff like that. But it has made them more reliant on tuition, which is why tuition increased a lot in the early 2000s. And now you have a tuition freeze in place. So that's it sort of speaks to the limited flexibility that the system has.
Yeah, Barb, thank you so much for the call. And Kelly, you've also been looking at campus emergency phones. You recently explored how often they're used at UW-Madison. You found that people rarely use them for actual emergencies. What's going on there?
Yeah, so I was curious about there's these blue lights on campus. You may see them in parking garages or somewhere around campus. Students or faculty or staff can press them and the police come. But with cell phones nowadays, they're vastly underused. But they're still, you know, a cost to operate and maintain for campuses. So the discussion sort of nationally in colleges across the country is looking at, should we get rid of them? I mean, and save some money? Should we keep them? What I found in my reporting is students recognize, you know, they don't really use these lights at all, but they like having them around there just in case.
So you found how many, how many calls do they get from these lights?
In 2018 on UW-Madison's campus, when you take out all the prank calls and the missed dials, they had 3 legitimate calls that year. None of them were an emergency. I mean, for example, one of them was someone who couldn't find their car. So,
is this the case across all UW system schools? Do all of the campuses have these blue lights?
I don't know if every single one, I didn't look at every single campus, but the majority of them do, and the majority of them are sort of confronting what to do with them. For example, at UW-La Crosse, they seem to like them. They promote them to students as something to use in non-emergencies. But then you look at like UW-Milwaukee, and they're sort of starting the conversation this fall about, you know, should we phase them out or should we keep them going?
Do we know how much they cost to operate?
UW-Madison wasn't able to provide me with a cost estimate for their for operating them. At UW-Oshkosh, they told me that it costs about $1,500 to keep the phones going each year. But the problem is a lot of universities, they're sort of converting all of their phone systems from this old technology to a digital phone line. And so they have to bring the new, the blue light phones in line with that.
Oh, that whole VoIP conversion.
I
don't even know
VoIP.
What VoIP stands for, the acronym, if someone can help us there. But yeah, so even those phones, the blue light campus phones, have to be converted.
Yeah, they're looking to upgrade them, and that could you know, cost a bit more. At UW-Oshkosh, they're estimating it'll be about $189,000.
So in this era where so many cell phones are out there, is this an expense? Or even taking them off a campus would be an additional expense?
That's true. I mean, that's sort of the question that all the campuses are grappling with is, what do we want to do with these?
Well, Kelly, we have just a few moments here, but looking forward as a higher education reporter, what do you have your eye on these days?
I mean, I think the tuition freeze is something that, you know, the system's always watching. The legislatures, I think they're coming back into session in October, so that's something to watch. You know, students are coming back to campus in the fall, so we'll see where it goes.
So you have a busy schedule as you look to have school back in session, that there will be issues coming up once students come back.
Yeah, things definitely pick up in the fall.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Kelly Meyerhofer is the higher education reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Just ahead, we get an update on the state's tracking of opioid-related deaths and a new opioid dashboard. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.